From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Sam Baker. Today we'll open some hate letters sent to the city of Dallas after President John F. Kennedy's assassination, and we'll hear a pastor testify to hurt inside the city before the nation mourned. But first, new life in health technology startups. Lauren Silverman explains how one new group in North Texas is trying to groom startups for success.
The pitch meetings happen every Wednesday afternoon in what used to be a three-story church in uptown Dallas. For 12 weeks at a time, a dozen startups essentially live here, practicing how to ask for money. This is Hubert Zajcek's first crop of Health Wildcatters. It's an offshoot of the three-year-old Tech Wildcatters group. Each startup CEO has 5 minutes to tell the group of 50 or so people why they should invest. First up, Michael Walsh, founder of a company called Careloop.
Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come to finally bring the geriatric care industry forward to make it easier for you to get the answers you need.
Careloop helps seniors and caregivers get information about geriatric care. Next up.
Good afternoon. My name is Missy Malone. I'm a certified medical nail technician, founder and CEO of Spontaneity Natural Nail Salon.
Spontaneity, based in Fort Worth, is no normal mani-pedi shop. It caters to the growing population of people at high risk of infection, with immune systems weakened by diabetes or cancer.
The U.S. nail industry is a $10 billion market. 30% of those visiting the nail salons are chronically ill. This lets us know this is a huge market, but very much underserved.
Each of the 12 Health Wildcatters gets $35,000 in seed money, space to work, and access to 70 mentors who help refine their business plans. The mentors, physicians, business people, venture capitalists, they're there for encouragement. But after the applause ends, the critique begins, Shark Tank style.
There was one slide when you did your ask.
I didn't think that you guys jumped out.
You went through that one really fast.
Okay, well, how are you going to do this?
How are you going to prove that works?
We get so much criticism. It's tough to sort it out now.
Michael Walsh started Careloop in Minneapolis in 2009. He moved to Dallas to take advantage of the enormous senior care market.
And to come into this accelerator program where you've got like 50, 60, 70 people that all want to take your business plan, literally mangle it, spit it out the other end 10 times stronger in 3 months. It is 12 months of work in 12 weeks. It is intense. It is, but powerful, really powerful stuff.
For Missy Malone, who just opened her first Spontaneity salon, this is the chance of a lifetime. Still, she admits it can be hard to pitch pumice stones and nail polish to mostly male audiences.
Particularly when, you know, the majority of them don't really do manicures and pedicures. So I feel like I have to work a little harder to provide clarity and get my point across.
About half of the startup teams selected for Health Wildcatters aren't from North Texas. Zajcek says, one's from Israel, another from California.
That means when they come here and they build their startups here, they need to know that this is fertile grounds for them. So they can grow with the region, have their first customers here, have their investors here, and grow the business here and become larger.
The final exam is this Wednesday. That's when all 12 companies will pitch to real investors for real money at the George W. Bush Institute in Dallas. Lauren Silverman, KERA News.
And you can find out how to get tickets for the Bush Institute event and more on Careloop and Spontaneity at breakthroughs.kera.org. After John F. Kennedy was shot a half century ago, hundreds of people mailed letters to Dallas, many of them furious at the city. These letters wound up at SMU. KERA's Eric Austin sorted through the collection.
Pamela Anderson pushes a cart into the SMU DeGoyer Library. On it are two boxes filled with hate.
So we're going to get some folders out. The first one is actually from letters dated the day of the assassination.
Anderson is an archivist here, and she knows these letters better than anyone. Just hours after President Kennedy was killed, people whipped out their pens and typewriters and dashed off their thoughts. The letters came in from across the country.
California, there's Minnesota, New York.
And started pouring in to the Dallas mayor's office. 48 hours later, Lee Harvey Oswald was killed, just blocks away from the site of the assassination. And more letters arrived, many drip with anger. Take this one from Massachusetts.
You and the people of your city should hang your heads in shame for the grievous and heinous crime committed in Dallas. This is not a mere accident.
And this letter from California.
How in heaven could you let Oswald get shot?
What kind of police protection do you have there? They must be incompetent.
That's Jeffrey Engel, director of the SMU Center for Presidential History. Even after reading the letters many times, he's still surprised by them.
They're not writing their congressman. They're not writing their mayor. They're writing someone else's mayor. And so really, this is almost a sense of just screaming into the wind, which apparently is something that people throughout the world feel the very human need to do.
In recent months, more scholars and researchers have sought out these letters, yearning to know more about the mood of the country in the fall of 63. Some letters are scrawled on scraps of cream and pale blue paper. The ink is smudged, the handwriting hard to read. Others are written in black ink in the neatest cursive. Some typed on business letterhead. All were sent to Dallas Mayor Earl Cabell, who gave his personal papers to SMU. During JFK's fateful visit, Cabell rode in the presidential motorcade. Soon after Kennedy was killed, reporters asked him if what happened would tarnish the city's reputation forever.
I don't think that this will hurt Dallas as a city, because I believe that the people of the nation realize that this was not an act of Dallas, not an act of the true thinking of Dallas. This was the act of a maniac.
But many Americans disagreed.
And if the police were any good, perhaps our president would still be alive.
You're emotionally against your city.
What kind of stinking police department lets a striptease criminal records man?
I hope the people of Dallas are proud of their behavior. Southern hospitality indeed.
The mayor responded to several of the letters, often defending his town. There were notes of support. One even came from Buffalo, where President McKinley was killed. The letter expressed sympathy and understanding for what Dallas was going through. One child from Minnesota sent a note saying her teacher had informed her of what had happened to Kennedy. But she had more pressing questions. Did the mayor have a big home? More importantly, did he have a horse? The mayor wrote back.
I do not live in a house that is nearly so big as the president. My house is medium size, has a nice lawn, and a few trees in the front backyard. I have not owned a horse for many years.
Tucked away in all those folders filled with hate, a little laughter. Eric Austin, KERA News.
You can read excerpts from some of the letters at keranews.org. Before the blame from outside, there was a great deal of pain felt in Dallas. On November 22, 1963, supporters were waiting uptown to hear the president speak when the motorcade broke from its downtown route and rushed to Parkland. As part of our JFK Voices project, a retired pastor remembers a party frozen in grief.
I'm Zion Holmes from Dallas, Texas. I was one of those invited to have dinner at the Trademark, and that is where President Kennedy was to speak. He was on his way there. I remember when I walked into the Trademark, did not begin to eat because someone got up and announced that the president had been shot, killed. And the thing that I remember was all of the food that was left on the table. I had never seen so much food left over anywhere in all of my life. We needed some soul food, some food for our spirits, because we were stripped of our pride and our pretension and our prejudice. One of the greatest tragedies that we experience in life is not so much as, you know, the tragedy of President Kennedy, but the tragedy of unlearned lessons. It's what have we learned from that experience? Have we been good stewards of the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy? I do believe that God does not want us to waste any experience that has happened. And I believe if we don't grow through what we're going through, life will check our transcripts and send us back to repeat the course.
We want to hear your stories, too. Send an email to jfk@kera.org or tweet with the hashtag JFKVoices. And we'll have 2 hours of live programming on Friday's anniversary from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Sam Baker. You can like KERA News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter.